are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Today we are in Castellina in Chianti.
Dove siamo, Lionel?
We're in Grave in Chianti in Tuscany. Beautiful. Sitting outside a bar. It's dried up. The sun, it's not quite shining, but it's warmer. It's not torrential rain like it was earlier this afternoon.
The showcase picture postcard stage didn't quite materialise, did it? Though it was beautiful, but the rain and the overcastness of it made it less than beautiful. My name's Richard Moore. I'm joined tonight by Lionel Burney.
Hello, Rich.
And Kayleigh Frett.
Hello.
Kayleigh wants his own theme tune. And explain the tinniness. That came out of his phone. We'll work on that, Kayleigh, for the Tour de France, because you're going to be joining us at the Tour as well.
Yes, I do like my own theme tune. I heard that Ciro might have his own, and I think that just for parody's sake.
He's got the Italian national anthem.
Mine's Bonanza, which is the American national anthem.
Excellent. Well, Kayleigh, it's always good to have you on the show. It'll be even better if you have your own theme tune, but especially on a time trial stage, because you're the equipment guru. You can tell us a little bit about some of the equipment that was being used today and whether that was significant or not. I mean, it was a really interesting stage, probably more so as a result of the weather. Lionel, can you give us a tale of the tapa?
I can indeed, yes. 40.4 kilometres from Rada in Chianti to Grave in Chianti. Heavy rain affected all the GC riders and some of the earlier ones too. It was Primoz Roglic, the Slovenian with Lotto Jumbo, who won the stage. Remember, Roglic had been second to Dumoulin in the first time trial back in Apeldoorn. Gianluca Brambilla of Etix Quickstep kept the Maglia Rosa by just 1 second from his teammate Bob Jungels. Most but not all of the top positions were filled by the early starters. Fabian Cancellara's recovered from his illness but could manage only fourth. Jungels was the outstanding rider among the late starters. He was sixth on the stage. Andre Amador of Movistar did a stunning ride as well, and he's now third overall. We'll have a little bit more on him later. Tom Dumoulin recovered from his bad day yesterday, 15th, just ahead of the other GC contenders. Vincenzo Nibali, Mikel Landa, Steven Kruijswijk and Alejandro Valverde were all bunched together and split by just 11 seconds. On the downside, Rafał Majka lost around half a minute to that group. Esteban Chavez and Ilnur Zakarin conceded more than a minute and a half to Nibali. Zakarin of Katusha in particular had a bad day with two crashes, including one heavy one on the final corner and two mechanicals. But he got away lightly compared to Rigoberto Urán of Cannondale. He lost just a second shy of 2 minutes to Nibali. A really bad day for Urán, considering he won a very similar time trial at Barolo in the 2014 Giro. In other news, Marcel Kittel's gone home after 8 stages and 2 stage victories, still waiting for his first win on Italian soil. And the jerseys are still on the same shoulders, being shared by the two big Belgian teams, Etix and Lotto Soudal. Brambilla in pink, Greipel in red, Wellens in blue and Jungels in white. Tomorrow is a rest day.
Wow, Lionel, that was breathless stuff. Wow, he's punching the air here. He's punching the air. Bob Jungels, yeah, very good ride by him. And Kayleigh and I took a long trek down to the team buses and showers, it's a long old walk, but it was worthwhile because we spoke to Mikel Landa, Tom Dumoulin, and Zakarin turned up as well, looking in a right mess. He really hurt himself quite badly. As we were walking back, we stumbled upon Bob Jungels riding back to his camper van, and stopped him and presented him with a Pedlar de Charme t-shirt. He offered him grey or white. He said he already had a white one, so he took a grey one. And he looked I think he looked happier than he looks on the podium when he's given his white young rider's jersey. What do you think, Kayleigh?
That was a heck of a ride today. I mean, he was, even Tom Dumoulin said that, you know, you take the rain out of the equation, he still had to have serious legs to take a minute out of everybody else. I think that was, for me anyway, the ride of the day, the Pedaleur de Charme of the day.
It's difficult, isn't it, to to look at it because the conditions did change so much, and Primoz Roglic, who's obviously showing his pedigree as a time trialist, a complete unknown, a former ski jumper, who came cycling quite late. You sat in on his press conference, didn't you, Lionel?
Yeah, well, what we knew about Roglic was that he was a ski jumper and he had a bad crash in, I think, the World Championships when he was a junior. I'm not an expert on ski jumping, so it doesn't mean a lot to me, but I've seen the clip on YouTube and, I mean, it's horrendous. I mean, he just falls out of the sky. I mean, I don't know ski jumping.
That's ski jumping. That's what you do.
Yeah, but you're
that's the point.
Aren't you supposed to land and then ski downwards?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't do that. He landed in a heap. But he didn't give up ski jumping because of that. He carried on until he was around 21, 22. But he said he was training to be the best ski jumper in the world, and he just wasn't. And he also had some injuries with his knee. And he bought a bike and he started riding, and it all went from there. And so he's discovered cycling relatively late. He rides for Lotto Jumbo, and he revealed today that this is the first individual time trial over 40 kilometres that he's ever done. He's done team time trials of this length, but this is the first, even as an amateur, this is the first 40-kilometre time trial he's done, so he says. So,
amazing. Yeah. Lotto Jumbo having a very good Giro, aren't they? And a team that we've not spoken about at all, I Am Cycling. Second and third on the stage, Matthias Brändli, second former World Hour record holder.
Well, you mentioned the conditions, Rich, and I was in the team car behind one of the Orica Green Edge riders, Damien Howson, former under-23 world champion in the individual time trial. He won that title in Florence, not far from here, of course. There'll be a kilometre zero on my day with Orica Green Edge because it didn't go to plan as far as I was concerned, and it probably didn't quite go to plan as far as they were concerned because Chavez was one of the losers overall. But we were out on the course, and the rain, when it came, it was really heavy, and it made the descending particularly absolutely treacherous. And I was going to ask Kayleigh, you know, these time trial bikes, they're so stiff, aren't they? They don't give a millimetre. And you could see Howson picking his way around these corners, particularly when they're steep and the kind of the camber of the road's going away from him. Everything is basically trying to throw him off. And it looked really uncomfortable at times.
Yeah, I mean, the bikes are definitely not designed to go around corners. They're designed to go very fast in a straight line. And it's everything from geometry to the brakes themselves. All these bikes have strange integrated brakes. And so they function very differently from the way that the brakes do on a regular road bike, and that wouldn't be such a big deal. It's not such a big deal for the guys that ride that bike a lot. They're probably used to it, but just the change, you know, the change in power and the change in modulation, you're going to grab a fistful of brake coming into one of those corners and just, well, just eat it. Pull a Zacharin, so to speak.
Is that what we're calling it now? Pull a Zacharin. He's overtaken Michael Rasmussen as the worst, he had a Western supermare of a time trial, didn't he? On the subject of braking and how tricky these time trial bikes can be, I spoke to Mikael Landa's mechanic, who was in the car following him, and he said he lost 2 years of his life following Landa, who took, he said, a lot of risks on a bike that he wasn't that familiar with. He also mentioned that the travel on the brakes, the levers, you know, there's a much shorter sort of reach. And so judging how the brakes work in these kind of conditions is a real factor. I spoke to Mikael Landa as well. The mechanic said that there were two moments where he thought Landa had come a cropper. He really went very close to crashing on two occasions. Spoke to Landa as well. So let's hear from Mikael Landa, one of the big winners of the day. He was 20th on the stage, and he has moved up to 8th overall. You must be very happy with that. Some are saying that's the best time trial you've ever ridden.
Yeah, that's true. I'm really happy. I think it has been a really good day for us, so very happy.
Is it just your legs are getting better? You seem to be getting stronger as the race goes on.
Yeah, at the beginning of the stage, I was not finding a good speed, but after some cases I start feeling better and better, and I finish really, really well.
There was dangerous conditions, it was very wet. Your mechanic said that you took some years off his life, a couple of scary moments.
Yeah, we have I'm lucky not to have a new bike, but also it was new for the downhill. No, I don't have too much confidence with the bike yet, and I have a pair of problems, no, but fortunately, I haven't crashed, and I train a lot this winter, and this was our first test. The best part of the Giro is coming for me.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
So you heard there our Eurosport jingle. Before that, Mikael Landa, who was a contender for Pedalar de Charme, the award sponsored by Eurosport. I've already mentioned Bob Jungels was owed a T-shirt. We're losing track of when. There were a few nominations today. Ilner Zakarin was not one of them.
I was just going to say on Landa, Rich, you mentioned about his time trialling in last year's Giro where he was on the podium and he was the outstanding rider in the mountains, winning back-to-back mountain stages, I think. But in the long time trial, which was stage 14 in last year's Giro, he lost 4 minutes to Alberto Contador. Although that was 59 kilometres, that just shows you how much Landa has kind of limited his losses. He hasn't lost anything, has he, today? A couple of seconds here or there. And after hearing a few rumbles that maybe he wasn't feeling too well earlier in the week, that was something that Philip Deignan and his teammate pretty much poo-pooed a couple of mornings ago and said, well, he seems all right to me.
One of the things that contributed to that rumour was the little video that he posted. But that was an app. Because I didn't know that. I'm stupid. I'm not with the kids. But I was speaking to Javier Arteche this morning, the Team Sky coach. I was saying, how's Landa? He looked terrible in that video that he posted the other night. He said, yeah, but you realise that's an app that designed to make you look older.
Was it on Snapchat?
No, it was some app that you put your on your phone. You know, I think that's how apps work. It basically adds about 30 years to your appearance. He had wrinkles and all. People thought that it was because he'd had a hard day, but it was just an app.
I don't have anything to say about that other than possibly could have been Snapchat. Snapchat has built sort of filters in. As a Snapchat expert,
well,
this might be a marginal gain. Team Sky, a new fraud. Scandal. They're getting their leaders to put apps on their phones that make them look older to have for some psychological advantage.
I have one more little comment about the rain today and Landa's particular performance. And actually, Tom mentioned this when we talked to him, is that the rain does kind of act to level the playing field somewhat because you just can't. You can't go as fast, and so if you're having a very very good day or a very very bad day, I think for those top guys, it does tend to sort of squish them all together, and that is what we see in the results today. Is that they're all relatively close, with the possible exception of Oran and the guys that fell down. As long as you don't fall down, it seems to be, to level the playing field a little bit.
Any other winners and losers we want to highlight today? I should finish my little Pedler de Charme bit there for Eurosport. Every day we're awarding a Pedler de Charme. Please send your nominations, hashtag PDCGiro. There won't be one tomorrow, it's a rest day. But we still owe Brambilla, I'm saying his name correctly because we've been corrected today that we were not pronouncing his name correctly. Brambilla is due a Pedler de Charme t-shirt. It was a bit tricky to give him that today. He was quite busy wearing a pink jersey. But we will get that to him at some point. And, keep your nominations coming in.
Boswell.
You had a little story about Ian Boswell, Kayleigh.
As a random aside, I was texting him after the stage, basically just saying, I texted a couple of the American guys and it just asked, did anybody crash, was my question. He said he didn't crash, but at one point the motorcycle was a little bit too far in front of him and he couldn't see him anymore, and he just found himself in course tape all of a sudden. I guess his glasses fogged up. He said it was the middle of a sort of rain, hail, thunderstorm thing that had come through, and he just could not see anything, couldn't see where he was going, and found himself just tangled up in that pink course tape that is all over the Giro. And said he didn't go down, but it was just kind of embarrassing to end up there.
If I make less and less sense as this podcast goes on, it's because I've just realised that the beer that I'm drinking, we have a bottle of beer as we do the podcast every night. That's traditional. And tonight we've picked up three bottles of homemade Italian beer, and this one is 9.5% alcohol drinking.
Oh my goodness.
You're driving, Lionel. What's your one? Kayleigh's 8.
5, only 5.
Lionel's 5. You're like driving.
The best young rider beer, really, isn't it? Anyway, should we move on to the overall picture?
The overall picture, yeah, absolutely. Well, Nibali had a pretty good day. He's up to 5th overall, possibly the biggest winner, but Landa just behind him in 8th. Valverde kind of rode according to expectations. There are a couple of others that we don't know whether they're overall contenders or not. Esteban Chavez, damage limitation for him. He didn't lose too much time. Obviously, this is not his terrain. But Andre Amador is somebody you want to talk about, Lionel, because that's somebody you've been... He's had one bad day, but he's back up to 3rd overall.
Yeah, well, he had a great time trial in Apeldoorn, didn't he? He really was the rider that you looked at the results sheet and thought, that's a great start for a guy that you know, fourth last year, admittedly 5 minutes away from the podium in the Giro, but still fourth overall. Got off to a great start. And then on stage four, with that punchy little climb on the way to Praia Amore, he lost, I think, 37 seconds and slipped away behind his team leader, Alejandro Valverde. And now, of course, he's right back up there. And I know we've had this debate about every second counting, Richard, and you said, well, if my uncle was my aunt, she'd be my whatever that phrase is.
Let's not do that one.
But had Amador not lost that time on stage four, he would be in the pink jersey tonight. And I know, you know, you can make that case for every rider, really. I mean, but Amador's a very interesting case. He's the only Costa Rican in the World Tour. He's 29 years old, so he's not a fresh-faced, baby of the peloton. His mother was Russian, his father Costa Rican, and I gather they met in Spain and moved to Costa Rica.
What about his uncle and his aunt?
We'll come to them in a future episode. He was born in Costa Rica, not at altitude. It is a very mountainous country, but he was not born high up. He's got an older brother, Ivan, another sort of Russian name, Andre and Ivan. And Ivan was also a cyclist, but not at the same level. He stayed racing in Central and South America. And Amador's career began really in 2008. Tour de l'Avenir, he was fifth overall in the year Jan Bakalansz won, and some of the other riders up there include Roy Costa, who's been world champion, Jerome Coppel, who's a French pro now, and TJ Van Garderen was also in the top 10 that year. Amador rode a tour for the first time in 2011, and he badly injured his ankle in a crash in the first 30 kilometres of the opening stage, and suffered through that tour, got through it almost on one leg, really. He was Lantern Rouge, the last man overall for a few days, and eventually finished second last, 4 hours down on GC. And his big breakthrough, stage win in this race, the Giro d'Italia in 2012, and then last year he was fifth on that stage to Aprica, which Mikel Landa won. Ended up fourth overall. And this season he's been riding the classics. So he's done the Tour of Flanders, he's done Doors Door of Vlaanderen, Gent Wevelgem, Milan San Remo. And the big thing he's got on his side is that he was part of the group that went and wrecked all of the big mountain stages in the last week of this Giro. He travelled with Valverde and was going just as well as Valverde in those training rides. So after that little blip earlier in the week, he's right back into contention, I would say. Going to be difficult to shift now, I think.
And, you know, a teammate of Alejandro Valverde, you look at some of the teams that are massing at the top of the general classification with more than one rider. Nibali's got Fuglsang nearby. Should have mentioned this when we talked about Mikel Landa. He's not... Nicholas Roach is reasonably high up the classification. He would have been helped hugely here by Sergio Henao, and Henao would have been here had he not had this issue with his biological passport, which is being investigated at the moment. But he would have been a very strong ally. We are going to catch up with Dave Brailsford and Team Sky on the latest on Henao's biological passport issue at some point in the Giro. But that's a huge loss for him. I understand that on the stage to Arezzo over the white roads and up the climb where Valverde did real damage and Landa struggled initially, it seemed, missed the initial split of six riders and got back up with a few other riders. Apparently it was Mikel Nieve, his fellow Basque, who did an amazing job there to tow him up to that group. So he's a useful ally. He was brought into the Giro very late on, but he'd been training for the Grand Tours and has been able to slot into that team.
Talking about the overall picture then, what you guys caught up with Tom Dumoulin at the finish, pink jersey until yesterday, a surprisingly bad day at Arezzo. We weren't expecting that, and of course we would have had him pretty much inked in to be top three in this time trial. He rode in the worst weather, finished 15th, did do better than all of the overall contenders, really. So what did Dumoulin say? And
well, let's hear from him. Kayleigh and I doubled up on Tom Dumoulin. Here he is at the finish. We're just looking at the overall, your seventh overall. So a solid performance in terms of the other GC riders, but how do you analyse that time trial?
It's a time trial. It actually says nothing with this weather. The one who takes the most risks and doesn't crash, it takes a lot of time. That's it, actually. I didn't. But Bob Jungels went really fast because he was more than a minute faster. I don't think that was only about taking risk. Then you also have some really good legs on the parts that you can pedal. So yeah, congrats to him. But wasn't my day.
How were your legs? Because you obviously had a bad day yesterday. Did you recover for today, or did you still feel that you're not at your best?
It was better than yesterday, actually. But probably with equal conditions, it would maybe also not be enough for the win. Yeah, that's it, actually.
And you had a problem with a saddle sore as well. Is that okay, or is that troubling you too?
It's quite troubling. I'm happy there's a rest day tomorrow. So not only my legs and my body can recover, but also the area down there. I hope to recover well tomorrow. And then, somewhere I'm going to lose time the coming week so that I can hopefully get in the break in the last week.
So the intention now is to lose time this week?
I think it's very difficult for me for the GC. You saw yesterday that I had quite some bad days. I didn't really prepare for the high mountain, so I better lose some time now that I can go in the break in a day and really go for a stage result again, than that I fight and then lose 10 minutes somewhere in the high mountains. And then being 12th or 14th in GC, that says nothing to me.
So we heard there from Tom Dumoulin, the Butterfly of Maastricht, as he's known. Apparently that's his nickname. Is that a new one on you, Kayleigh?
It's not new to me, although I saw someone tweet somewhere. I think you guys might have retweeted it, actually, that you would have to be on a pile of mushrooms to think of a nickname like that for a guy.
Or 9.5% beer. Let's talk about that interview, because as with every conversation with Tom Dumoulin, it was really interesting. He always offers you something. We'll miss him, I think, not being in the pink jersey. But it was very interesting, wasn't it, Kayleigh, what he said?
Yeah, I think we all kind of hope that he's the next great GC guy, just because he's such a fantastic interview from a purely sort of selfish perspective. But, the fact that he says he's going to purposely lose time next week, that's not something that we almost ever hear any bike racers say. I mean, even he has sort of hedged quite a lot in the press conferences over the last week. He's always saying, oh, we're just going to see how it goes. It seems that after Saturday's stage, where he, I guess, didn't feel very good on that last climb, he's decided doesn't want to go for it anymore. He's going to purposely lose time, lose enough that they'll let him into a breakaway, and then go for a stage win in the final week. And it makes some sense. I mean, if you're not going to end up in sort of the top five, if you see yourself in that sort of 8th to 15th kind of range, then yes, a stage win, you know, maybe to bookend the bike race, that would be a much better way to finish off this Giro.
Kayleigh, what about Rigoberto Urán, the leader of Cannondale, been second twice in the Giro, highly fancied, rode the first week almost perfectly, really, not really very visible. Today you would have expected him to, if not move forward, certainly not slip back. I mean, he lost a packet. Considering that he won a similar stage, albeit held in very different conditions, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think you couldn't really have built a better time trial for him. So that one was very surprising. I was discussing with some of the guys from the Global Cycling Network before the race, and my pick was actually Urán for today, at least from the GC guys, to sort of take the most time. And I was surprised. He was definitely not in the best mood. He wandered into the little paddock area where we were standing talking to Dumoulin and did a brief stint with Colombian television, as he always does, and then didn't really talk to anybody else. So I don't think he was too excited about today's ride. Definitely not a death blow. He's not completely out of it, although he will definitely have wished for something much better.
Nibali was good, wasn't he? And what's that? What's that I can hear, Lionel and Kayleigh? What's that noise?
It's the music, isn't it? The music.
Il re del cemento amava fare le cose in grande. The king of cement did not do things in half measures.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science and Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
So you heard there our Science and Sport jingle, and before that, The Shark's Tale, the latest installment of the Vincenzo Nibali life story. Very cryptic one. At least he's changed the sort of tone of it a little bit. I think he's bowed to pressure on Twitter and so on. We had a tweet today from somebody who said that he listened with his 7-year-old daughter and has some awkward explaining to do.
Yeah, pushing the bounds of decency in the last couple of days, hasn't it?
It really has been, yeah, but he's, you know, that was well, I mean, Daniel can explain what it was. It won't have meant much to many people, but it was a reference to the owner of one of Nibali's previous teams, Faza Bortolo. So that, read into that what you will. Daniel will be back tomorrow, in fact, to, you know, explain a little bit more about these vignettes that he's offering.
Well,
we'll
get, rather than pre-recorded Shark's
live.
Tale, we'll get live episodes, chapters of the Shark's Tale.
Wow. And I said there, you heard our Science and Sport jingle as well. Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for sponsoring us at this Giro d'Italia. A reminder that you can buy Science and Sport products at their website, www.scienceandsport.com. Enter the code SIS20, SIS20, and you will get 20% off. It's very generous of them, and without them, we wouldn't be here doing these episodes, regular episodes every night. And Kilometre Zero, the next Kilometre Zero, is coming out Monday morning for the rest day, and that's one that I've done on fathers and sons, mainly sons, looking at riders who have got famous cycling fathers and how they cope with riding in their shadow, so to speak. I want to give another little plug for an event. We're in Eroica district here in Tuscany. The race that's now known as Strada Bianchi began as Eroica. It was originally known as Eroica. And I passed a few roads today as I drove around the time trial course, the white roads of Tuscany, the dirt roads, which sometimes host that race and other events like it. Well, there's one in the UK as well called Eroica Britannia, which is more than just a bike ride, but a 3-day cycling and family festival from the 17th to 19th of June in Bakewell in the Peak District. And the reason I'm mentioning it is because, well, one, it's a great event and I'm going. And two, it's sponsored by Maserati, who have also kindly given us a car for the Giro. And it was first held last year, and I know a few people who went and had a great time.
Yeah, a friend of mine, very good friend of mine, did it last year, said it was an absolutely fantastic day's riding. He rode it on an old sort of early 90s or late 80s bike.
87. You've got to ride a pre-87 bike.
That's right, yeah.
You can ride.
I think he technically cheated then, unfortunately.
Oh, my God.
Do
you want to out him?
I don't want to out him, but parts of his bike were from the 90s.
So the rides are over 30, 55 or 100 miles. That's on the Sunday. But there's lots of other things going on as well. There's arts and culture and music. You can meet Paddington Bear or David Miller or both.
Wow. I mean, they both dress the same, don't they?
They dress very similarly now you mention it. I'm doing a Q&A with David Miller on the Saturday. So if anybody's around, please do come along. They had 3,700 riders doing it last year. It sounds great. I've not been before, but I'm looking forward to it.
While you're...
And sorry, can I just say the website? And it's very cheap, actually. It's not expensive at all to go. HTTP. I don't want to read out all that. Just go to eroicabritannia.co.uk. Lionel's looking at me in disgust. After my earlier talk of apps, now I'm struggling to read out a website.
Yeah.
Eroicabritannia.co.uk.
You're not really our head of tech, are you, Rich? You know, if it's not written down on a piece of paper, it doesn't exist. While you're mentioning things, we should thank everyone that's helped us get this far through the Giro.
Let's do that.
Particular thanks to our production team, John Mooney, Jonathan Rowe, Alex Adie, Tom Wally, Paul Scoynes and Tom Glasser.
An extra thanks to Jonathan Rowe, who was mentioned there as a producer, but is generally does everything that we don't do. I mean, without Jonathan Rowe, the podcast wouldn't exist, and that's not an exaggeration.
He wasn't here to pick up your results sheets.
I just dropped some results sheets
on the floor, so yeah. I'll do
so
that.
So, Jonathan Rowe, thank you very much. Thank you to Nick Christian, who does our newsletter, and Simon Gill, our photographer.
Thank you to our heads of sponsorship, Paul Shafto and Nigel Brown.
And we want to, of course, thank our special guests who've joined us this past week, Kayleigh Fretz, Sophie Smith, Ciro Scognamiglio, and Dan Hackenberg.
And our music, the wonderful theme music by the London-based Pizzica group, Amaratera.
Amaratera and 13 Senses, who provide the music for Kilometre Zero. Thank you to all of those people. They're great. And we've said this before, that a lot of them, if not all of them, got involved with the podcast by just getting in touch and offering their services. That's how it happened.
They did indeed, and we're very grateful to them for that, because without all of those people, we wouldn't... Well, we're hopeless, aren't we?
Completely.
It would have fallen apart by now.
Absolutely. It might be falling apart as we speak. Anything else from today to wrap up before we go into the rest day, chaps?
I go home. No, I don't go home. I go to California. I could send you something from California.
That'd be great, Kayleigh. Thanks very much.
That's about all I can promise.
A little dispatch from the tour of California.
Hey, that would be good. We might take you up on that offer. Yeah, that would be excellent. Thank you. Yeah. Well, enjoy the tour of California.
Rich, you're also heading off tomorrow. I'm dropping you at Pisa Airport in the morning. You're flying home for a week, and Daniel is coming out. So a bit of a Madison hand sling there on the cycling podcast.
I was going to wear my captain's armband tonight, and I forgot. I've left that in my bag.
Well, hand it over to one of us at the airport. And, I mean, it doesn't matter which one of us you choose, Richard.
I think it probably does, but
it really does. Give it to Daniel.
Yeah, no, I'm heading home for a week. I'm going to still be have a presence in the podcast. I'm going to take responsibility for the Daily Pedlar de Charme.
You're going to stitch it up here, aren't you?
So I'm going to be in charge of choosing Pedlar de Charme every day, and I'm going to choose people like. So I'm going to basically, my job will be to decide who Daniel and Lionel have to approach and go through that awkward thing of explaining Pedlar de Charme. I think Ilner Zakarin will definitely feature, and Alejandro Valverde.
Yeah, here you are, Ilner. Here's a cotton T-shirt to stick to all your wounds. the thing is, the Pedlar de Charme, you say explain the Pedlar de Charme. I find it impossible to explain. How do you define it, really?
It's easy. Pedlar de Charme.
Yeah.
I think if you don't understand it immediately, you're never going to. That's what I think.
Most people do understand it, fortunately. But I'll make sure over the next week, like, pick people who I think might not understand it.
Right.
And that should be entertaining. That'll give me some entertainment as I'm sitting at home watching it on the sofa.
I'm going to brush up on my Photoshop skills and work out how I can Photoshop the T-shirt into some random pictures of riders going past. I'm one step ahead of you, Rich.
Brilliant. Well, anyway, I'm away home for a week. Daniel's out. I'm coming back on the third rest day, actually, and Lionel's flying home on that day. So it'll be Daniel and me for the final week. So we're mixing it up a bit, and we'll have other guests. Not Kayleigh, unfortunately, but Kayleigh will be rejoining us for the tour. Sorry, this is the Giro. Kayleigh, have you had a good Giro?
I've had a lovely Giro. Yeah, Tour de Yorkshire first, and then the Netherlands was fantastic. I've enjoyed Italy as you always enjoy Italy, and now it's time to go back to the motherland.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us on a couple of occasions here. And thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Safe trip home.